So, another heat wave. They just keep on coming. Oh, there seems to be some disagreement actually between apps as to the temperature. Well, my car claims it's 32 degrees centigrade outside. My phone seems to think it's a mere 28. Either way, high temperatures by UK standards. Oh. Anyway, I'm wandering around Cadnam Common at the moment, which is technically part of the New Forest, but it's on the very edge of the forest. In many ways, it's like the New Forest in miniature, with its different types of habitat it encompasses, and the various livestock that wander about freely on the common. You'll be actually must be here on the common. It's mainly sheep, but you'll also find ponies and cattle sometimes wandering about. But the great thing with it, compared to the main part of the New Forest, is there are fewer people about, especially this late in the afternoon. It wasn't my intent to come down here this late in the afternoon, but one thing and another prevented me from getting out of the house. But here I am. Right now it is incredibly quiet here. There's next to no traffic on the road, the main road that goes through here. There's no other people about, and there aren't even any sheep or ponies about. So, you know, and there's a nice breeze blowing to take the edge off of that heat. All in all, a very pleasant summer's day. This isn't the part of the forest for tourists, basically. It's mainly locals coming. There is no car park. Well, there's one car park up at the far end from where I am at the moment, and away from the main part of the common. Otherwise, you do as I do at the moment. Yes. There's some nice wide verges you can park on if you're coming through. But there's no tarmacked car parks or gravelled car parks, which is good. As I say, makes it nice, quiet and peaceful. Although it doesn't prevent cyclists from coming through here. Bane of my life, cyclists. But, yeah, sometimes you need to get away from the main touristy bits of the national park. I mean, several things have motivated me, apart from just the weather, to come down here today. In no small part has been the spectacular fall in the cost of fuel for cars. This between the last week and this week. I mean, last week I thought it was cheap when I got, I managed to put some diesel in the car, only £1.87 a litre. I did that in Winchester because up in Crapchester it's tuppence a litre, more expensive most places. But today, I found it was it dropped down to £1.80.9 a litre, which is a spectacular fall. That's 9 pence it's dropped in price here in Crapchester. So obviously it makes it cheaper to put fuel in the car. It sure makes me more inclined to drive long distances. Which is the other reason, because I'm completely out of practice at driving longish distances. I mean, I've driven over an hour to get here. So, you know, that's helped us get me back in practice. And it's given me a chance on at least part of the route to check where there are roadworks and so on, which are going to interfere with me when I start coming down here a bit more frequently once the heat subsided a bit later in the month. As I always do in late August, early September, I spend a fair amount of time down in the New Forest and on the coast. And I'm avoiding the coast today because, one, I started out too late. But two, from the outset, I had no intention of going there. This is school holidays, it's very hot. It's going to be packed down on the beaches. And that's no fun. Be like last year and I had to queue for an ice cream. Unheard of. Absolutely unheard of. You know, hit Milford-on-Sea having to queue to buy an ice cream. Outrageous. All these people who normally take the holidays abroad are... it started during the pandemic, of course, because you couldn't go abroad. So all these people used to look down their noses, the likes of me, are quite happy to take the holidays here in the UK and take the holidays locally. And all of a sudden, they're all on my bloody beach. I get very proprietorial about some of the beaches around here. But yeah, all of a sudden they're all there, and I've noticed it's continued now because, of course, money's short and whatever, with the recession looming, inflation rampant, Prime Minister heading a government that frankly doesn't want to do anything other than go on holiday at the moment, and neither of the candidates to replace the current Prime Minister seem to be particularly inclined to do anything which will actually help ordinary people in this situation, rather than just proposing tax cuts, which ultimately will only benefit the wealthiest. It won't benefit people further down the line. But there you go. Politics, you see, get everywhere. Oh, there's some ponies coming up in my rearview mirror as I sit here. They are wandering on the opposite side of the road in my direction. Ambling, I think, is the right word to describe the way they're always unhurried. They don't care who they hold up, how long they hold them up for. Just move this unhurried pace. They know they have the right of way around here. Actually, in this part, as far as on Cadnam Common, it's not just ponies, you get donkeys here. Little donkeys. Herds of the bloody things wander around as well. There you go. Oh, they're stopping. They found something to eat. Because that's the other thing. With all this heat, sun, it's the grass is bleached at the moment. Sun bleached everywhere. I think they have found something else to eat. Yeah, there you go, they're heading off now. They're level with me and heading off into the scrub. At their languid pace. They've got the right idea. Okay. I'm off of Cadnam Common now. I discovered where all the horses, donkeys and whatever were. They're a bit further down on Pen Common, which is, it's sort of part of Cadnam Common, but you know, it's a bit further south. It's on the same road. They're contiguous, I think that's the word. Anyway, but now I'm just south of No Man's Land, which is a village on a hill commanding a fascinating view. A bit south of that, wandering around. Well, most people think of the New Forest as being in Hampshire, and indeed most of it is, but this around No Man's Land is a little bit of the forest that creeps across the border into Wiltshire, my home county, interestingly. It's not much, but there is this little bit that creeps across. And it is typical, typical of the forest, to say. Varying habitats, lots of wooded areas, lots of heathland and common and scrubland. There you go. But yeah, no man's land. Yeah. When I was a kid in Salisbury, that was the furthest out that the catchment area for schools in Salisbury went. Because we had kids who lived in no man's land and came into school in the same class. We used to have this perilous bus journey along sort of, you know, side roads and lanes and things to get them to and from school. Sort of an over an hour each way. Because, you know, the way buses are, stopping all the time, taking detours through villages and things. Yeah, just going to and from school was an adventure for them. That's me. I lived about 10 minutes walk away, but there you go. Well, 15 minutes, we'll put it 15 minutes walk away. So, yeah, it wasn't such an adventure for me going to school. Oh, and here I am at a high point where I get a lovely view to the north. Cadnam Common, bits of Cadnam Common. And see, the ground rises again, dips down to get to Cadnam Common, then after that, as it leaves the New Forest, it rises again. Ah, so there you go, that's day one of summer, my summer travels. Here you go. Today I'm at Home Farm Country Park, which, as its name implies, is what was once some farmland but is now being allowed to rewild. It's open to the public to wander around. But today there's an extreme heat warning in place today, so you know, so obviously I come out, don't I, to walk around. It's well over 30 degrees centigrade, Celsius, sorry, which is extremely hot for this country. In fact, recently, apparently for at least one day, we were hotter than Death Valley. There you go. Who says we Brits don't set this the trend? You are. Climate change deniers, take note. This is not normal, but is becoming more of a regular occurrence, these extremely hot days during summer, and even sometimes in spring and into early autumn. Very, very unusual for the UK. But as I say, so here I am, out on a day with an extreme heat warning. Because only mad dogs and English would come out in the midday sun, but it isn't the midday sun. I've left it to late in the afternoon when the sun is not directly overhead, and there's a nice breeze blowing which takes the edge off the heat. This is the other side, the other half of Home Farm Country Park. In that is across the road from where I park my car, with the car park I usually use. Now, I've always been aware that there existed another part of Home Farm apart from the bit that I usually habituate, which is mainly wooded, but with some bits of open common on it. But recently I've actually found the two join up, and if I actually just walk directly across the road from where I parked the car and walk through what I recall used to just be a field, is now being rewilded and connects up this whole other bit of habitat, both woodlands and open heathland, which I'm walking through now. And what I'm doing today is I'm taking a path through here I've never taken before. This is the high road, the higher path. So I've not taken this one before. Right, it's a choice here of direction to take. And you know, as ever, I know where that path branching off to the left goes. I'm not so sure about this one. Well, I know where it'll end up eventually, but it's a route I'm less familiar with. Here we go. It's interesting that on the one hand, when you hear in the depths of the country park, it feels as if you're in the middle of nowhere, because I've lost sight of roads and things. Yet, ever present is the modern world and man, the works of man, because parallel with the path I'm on now, of course, the high volt, it's a lot of high voltage electricity lines. Strung on their poles. These are just on wooden poles up high, rather than on the big pylons, which you can see striding across, still see striding across parts of the English landscape. Although increasingly the lines are put underground. But yes. So it's the modern world is inescapable. And another gate. Oh dear. Here we go. Now, you can't see the high power lines from here now. There's trees and shrubs on both sides of me. And we're starting the ascent back uphill. Right, starting the descent now. The path starts sloping back downwards. So because of all the fact I've got trees on either side of me, can't see exactly where I am in relation to the rest of the park, but I've got a reasonable idea. And I know where this ends up. But talking about climate change and modern technology, there are quite a lot of solar farms around here. There's one right next door to the country park, actually. And one might argue one of the benefits of climate change is with more and more intense sunshine throughout increasingly large parts of the year here, it will help make those solar farms much more productive. But that's trying to put a positive spin on it all. Interestingly though, we're back to politics. I can't stay away from it. One of the candidates currently battling out the Tory party leadership and ultimately the post of Prime Minister, Liz Truss, who is basically a swivel-eyed loon, was recently spouting off, because of course they've got to do is appeal to these 160,000 or so members of the Conservative Party who are basically mainly older middle class, very well off middle class, upper middle class reactionaries. And she's busy spouting off about how she had her way. The English landscape would no longer be blemished with these solar farms and wind farms. It's an outrageous blemish. You know, what a bizarre thing for the rest of us to hear someone who aspires to lead this nation politically to say at a time when energy prices are through the roof because fossil fuels, be it gas, oil, whatever, become more expensive for all manner of reasons. They're getting more expensive anyway. They're incredibly polluting. And she comes out against renewables, renewable energy sources, which we should be focusing on and increasing. It really is quite bizarre, these people. I fear for this the future of this country. I fear for the future of mankind, of people like her, of a similar mindset, keep getting into power. It's absolutely insane. Ah, there we are. Another gate. And it gets us back to the main part of the park. You know, the common on my left. And a choice. Do I take the left turn, go through the gate, get straight back on the common, or keep straight on along the higher, because this is a higher level path. Should it curve down to meet the common down there? I'm going to take the higher road because in fact I don't know this bit at all. Oh, and here we are now. So back on the common. It's all sun-bleached grass. It's like a tinderbox. There's fire warnings all over the place. And back uphill. So we reach the summit here. Towards an interesting view. Oh, now this is where you know for sure we're not far from civilization. You can probably hear in the background cars in the distance, and that's from the main road to Alton, which lies beyond the park. And there ahead of me is the South car park, where I'm not parked. Right, now they graze cattle in this part of the park. Over in the other part of the park, they sometimes graze sheep on the common and the heath. But here, it's cattle. And to be precise, these are bullocks. No, I really saw them. No, bullocks. No udders and horns. And some of them are longhorn. So one at the moment, I'm amazed they found anything to eat, the way everything's been sun bleached. There's one of them now, I can see, I'm just walking past him. He's huge and has a truly magnificent set of horns. Which why, I don't approach cattle full stop. I'm in no hurry to provoke him. Left alone, they're placid enough. Oh. Yeah. Well, it's... Oh, and another, and his mate, there's another one that's got huge horns as well. Yep, you alright, mate? Yeah. Yeah, we're fine, aren't we? Yep, you carry on eating grass, mate. Pay no attention. That's the thing. As long as you look as if you're presenting a threat, they're fine. They'll watch you, that's all. Right. So, here I am. Approaching the midway point on my walk. Oh, yeah. The heat and the fact I'm still out of condition is showing. So I'm going to have a little sit down on, there's a picnic bench here, right at the highest point here. I'm going to have a little sit down here, drink some more water. And then start making my way back toward the North Car Park, where I've parked my car. And I'll sign off here. So that was it. Oh. Day two of my summer excursions. Undoubtedly here. Today I've made it to the coast. I'm here at Leap Beach, a favourite summer haunt of mine. I say Leap Beach, I've actually sat on a bench on the cliff overlooking Leap Beach. A cliff. All the signs tell me are unstable. It's unstable. Tell me something I didn't know. this cliff has been crumbling all the time I've been coming here. And that's a long time. Probably half a century or so I've been coming. I can recall coming here, probably longer than that. But yeah. Yes, I think the tide is just coming in. It's been quite a while though since I've been to Leap Beach, simply because the parking charges are quite steep here. But I thought, what the hell? I'm only going to be here for an hour or so today. And besides, unlike a lot of beaches along here, you can actually park close to the sea, especially if you come along again today, fairly, you know, relatively late in the afternoon. There's plenty of space on the bit that faces directly onto the sea, which I like. I like that little bit sitting in my car before I leave, watching the waves coming. Alright, I'm going to make my way down the beach. Actually, before I leave this spot, I've just noticed on this tree, there's a tree here and there's all sorts of stuff pinned to it. It looks like some kind of memorial to people. I mean, I know there have been some drownings here in the past. These appear to be memorials, and most bizarrely, there's a key hanging here. Key to what? I don't know. It's like somebody's baby scan. There's various key rings, but with no keys. Best granddad on the ring, says. To granddad. Yeah, all very odd. Yeah. This is a fairly secluded bench, this one, but yeah, very odd. Right, down at the far end of the beach now. As I said, I've been coming here for decades. my parents used to bring me and my siblings here during the summer. Many a day we spent here. Of course, back then, it was like the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s. I think the early 70s, the memories of it. It was all very different. Now there's this, this is part of Leap Country Park. There's a visitor centre and restaurant down at the car park end. Back in my day, it was like a couple of Nissan huts there with a shop in them. You might have had a cup of tea there, it was about the best you could hope for. Sometimes there's an ice cream van parked up on the upper parking level. Up on the cliff there's a parking level as well. But back then, all this stuff I'm now walking around, there was never any explanation offered for it. It was just these big chunks of concrete that were down here at this end of the beach, and these sort of piers, remnants of piers set out in the water, and a couple of huge bollards, and no explanation. And but now they do have the stuff explaining it. This is where a lot of the D-Day preparations occurred. And if you're aware, the Mulberry harbours, the big artificial harbours that were constructed and taken over to France, they're produced in, you know, parts of them, some of the largest parts of the caissons, which are made out of concrete, were assembled on this beach. In fact, what I'm sitting on now is one of the remnants of the wooden rail, of the supports for the wooden rails. They were slid from the, there's a big concrete base where they were constructed, and then they were slid on wooden rails down into the sea and towed off by tugboats. And this is also where a lot of the specialist military vehicles for the British and Canadian beaches were loaded onto tank landing craft, which is why the remnants of the piers are there, because that's where some of the ships tied up when they were waiting to come in. The bollards there are also where landing craft ships were tied up to as they loaded. In fact, all along this beach there were a lot of them being torn out by the sea now. You will see they look like big bars of chocolate. They were treads, concrete treads, put down onto the beach for vehicles to go down into landing craft that would pull up to the beach and load to landing craft. The beach for wheeled vehicles to go to. And after all this time, of course, the elements, the sea, the tides have taken their toll. So much of it's been, I mean, it's a testament to the power of nature. So much of the concrete's been broken up now, eroded. When I was a kid, we didn't know any of this. There was nothing to tell us this. These were just these big bits of concrete. And also the Pluto fuel pipeline that was taken across to France for D-Day to supply, obviously, vehicles with fuel. And that came through here because up behind me is, in fact, you can't see it because of the trees, and there's no huge flames today, but behind me is Fawley Oil Refinery, one of this country's biggest oil refineries. And in fact, until a few years ago, you could also see Fawley B Power Station. That's now demolished. They had these huge chimneys that sometimes would belch thick black smoke. I mean, I don't know what they burned in there, but it didn't look very helpful. But yeah, as I sit here on the water's edge, I look across and I can see the Isle of Wight is directly opposite me. And it's so close that you can see, I can see Osborne House, which is Queen Victoria's summer pad. Also, you can see, just still see, the Saunders Row hangars, which is where they used to construct flying boats at the time. Including the huge Princess flying boats built in the early 50s, which were the the pinnacle of aviation, British aviation folly. So huge they could reach anywhere in the British Empire, but you know, at a time when we were also developing the Comet jet airliner, these were piston engine. One of them, three were built, one of them, the prototype, actually flew. But inevitably, they were out of time, you know, they were out of their time. And very light aircraft going past. And they were cocooned in plastic. And they were beached on the side of the just up the road, up at Calshot Beach, beside the Calshot Castle, for many years. I think it's the late 60s, finally, when they were scrapped. But they were cocooned in plastic to preserve them. Well, they desperately tried to find buyers for them. This, along with Calshot Beach, is my favourite places for watching the ships coming past. They come past here to go down into Southampton Water, whilst the tankers go before them. And ships go down to Southampton Docks, which is also one of our main line ports in this country. It's a little line that's coming down. Sort of cruise ships, as they're correctly called these days. Today, however, apart from the Isle of Wight ferries, there ain't much movement. Usually I see coming over the horizon, I usually spot huge container ships and, as I say, quite a few light passenger ships. Because there's a sandbank here, as they come in, they have to do this dog-leg manoeuvre to avoid it, and then, you know, they actually come through 90 degrees to. They look as if they're going to come and beach themselves, because they come directly towards the beach, and then they go through this sharp 90 degree manoeuvre to avoid the sandbank. So they're heading down into Southampton Water. If you get out of Calshot, you're getting even closer to come to Southampton Water, because they come right past the castle. Big cargo ships, you know, lines, and they are huge, they dwarf the castle. So many childhood memories here. Again, it's a sign I'm getting old. These memories all. They mean more to you as you get older, these memories. And, so that's why every August I now come like on a pilgrimage down this part of the coast, through the New Forest and all these places, because they're part of my childhood. So, you know. Fond memories of us all being crammed into my dad's old Ford console with its bench front seat and its column shift gear lever. It's a Mark II console. It was a big old car, but it hated going up hills. It used to conk out quite frequently in the face of its radio. Of course, there's the days for mobile phones, that left my father having to go and find a phone box where he could phone up his brother, my uncle Charlie, who he bought the car from, and who was the used car dealer, and he sold used cars from my garage, and used to come out in his tow truck. And then fix the bloody thing until he counted another hill. See, this beach holds all these memories for me of slightly soggy sandwiches. We used to keep them in those plastic containers. The smell of the plastic used to cling to them, and the smell of damp towels. After we came out of the sea, the towels used to put the towels, you know, folded up back in the bag, in the back of the car. You'd still smell these damp towels. Oh, the smells of summer. I like seeing the beach watching, because it's, again, it's the thing as you get older. It's the closest thing to eternity we see as human beings. Because as I get older, like most people, I get ever more keenly aware of my own mortality. And the fact that, you know, life is fleeting.
our time here is fleeting and entirely temporary. There is no permanence. Indeed, there's memories to have, but no permanence to human life. And yet, I sit here and watch the sea hurling itself against the beach. And it's been doing this for millions of years. It's going to carry on doing it long enough. It's been doing this long enough that it's reduced all these rocks to little rounded pebbles, pounding relentlessly at them. It just does it day in and day out. It'll keep on doing it. So, closest thing to eternity, you see. And yet everything else around it changes as it breaks down into concrete structures here and everything. So, the past few years haven't been kind to the beach because of storms and rising tides. It's really eroded the cliffs. It's done a lot of damage along here. Well, that's the thing, see, because when they built all the stuff here for D-Day, everything had to be brought in by road because there's no railway that comes down here. There's no branch off of the main line that comes down here. So we'll have to be brought down by road. So there was a concrete road built along the back of the beach, but that itself is largely eroded away now, cracked and gone. It's covered by sand now, mostly. Time marches on, nature marches on. Okay, I'm off the beach now because I didn't want to go over the hours parking, because I'd be, even if I went a few minutes over, I'd be forced to pay another £2.50 for another hour, even though I was only going to be there for a few minutes. So anyway, I'm parked up now a couple of miles down the road overlooking the salt marshes here. I might even eat my sandwich while I'm here. Anyway, that's my day at the beach. Well, hour at the beach on an otherwise busy day. Going to other places. Walking down this grass always makes me think some of the paths I've walked down, or have walked down the past, to get to beaches, whatever. Except this doesn't lead to a beach. Well, I have to walk a very long way to get to a beach. This is the path leading to Old Winchester Hillfall, which is where I am today. You can see why Iron Age forefathers built their settlement here. It is the highest point for miles and miles. There are steepish hills on two sides, very steep hills, one side quite a steep hill, and the other side is indeed accessible from the road here, but it's a hell of a walk. You can see anybody approaching, again, from quite some distance. So you can see why they're up here. Right now, I'm sat on a bench at the entrance to the actual fort area itself. And this is one of the reasons I love to see the English countryside unrolls beneath me like a patchwork quilt or something. It's quite marvellous. And equally, I can see someone walking along part of what is the Circular Walk, as it's known, which leads down from here and actually circles back eventually to the car park. But I've walked it twice in my life. First time was 20 odd years ago when I was a lot fitter and it tested me then. A few years later I did it again and I thought it was going to kill me. The gradients are so steep at either end, so it doesn't matter which direction you do it in. You end up nearly having a heart attack. But
but it's a fantastic walk. It takes you around the edge of the hill here, then down steeply into some woods, and you go back up steeply, back up towards the car park. As I say, we're near the entrance here. We have our little information thing telling us the settlements here date back to at least the early Bronze Age, 3,800 years ago. So yeah, nowadays, I mean, the ramparts are still intact. The earth ramparts. There's also several burial mounds up there. And apparently, if you dig down, you can find the remnants of the foundations of things like the gatehouse and the huts. Anyway, I'm going to go up onto the ramparts. Ooh, this is one of the highest points on the fort. This is where the gatehouse was originally. Because, of course, there'd also been a wooden fence atop this rampart as well back in the day. But, you know, it makes you think. When people first settled here 3,800 years ago, the ancient Egyptians already had an established civilization. They had cities. They had magnificent stone monuments. And my ancestors were living in wooden huts at the top of a hill. But, you know, that was the time throughout the Bronze Age and later the Iron Age. There were hundreds, probably thousands, of these little settlements scattered all over the British Isles. Often with little contact with each other. Fearful as the fortification, the fact that, you know, this is fortified, fearful of any other human beings they might encounter. Oh, you can guess from the wind sounds. I am up. This is actually pretty high. So there's all sorts of birds of prey wheeling around overhead. But the view from up here is magnificent. I can see from up here. Well, I can see the sea. And we are a long way from this, quite some way from this. I can see the Solent, the strip of the Solent. I can see on the other side of that the Isle of Wight. I can see Fawley Oil Refinery, which I was on the opposite side of the other day, when I was at Leap Beach. But there it is. Sometimes you can see the flames coming out of the tops of the chimneys at the refinery as they crack various products, their oil products there. And they burn off the waste. And on really clear days, and unfortunately today isn't clear enough, you can sometimes see the light glinting off of the sea at Chichester Harbour, which is over in Sussex, next county. It's not clear enough for that today. So I have to make do with the Fawley Oil Refinery today. All the chimneys of it are standing up there on the horizon, you can see it quite clearly. And there's another big grey haze as well over to the right of Fawley, and that's Southampton. Oh, well, I'm coming up parallel now. I'm beginning to go parallel to the very highest point of this hill fort, which is occupied by a series of burial mounds, barrows as they're known. And you can find these, well, particularly in the south of England, you can find them all over the place. Often they're hidden in woodland now. But it's where they buried the, we assume the great and the good. But we don't really know. Often, unless we assume it's like a local chieftain or whatever, village elders get buried in these, in the barrows. You'll often find the remnants of cremation pits around them, where other people were cremated and their bones and ashes then interred inside in the sides of the barrel. Let's go across to take a closer look, because it's interesting, they're covered in grass now, but when they were built they would have been white chalk. Didn't have any grass, you could see the white chalk because it's chalky ground here, and they'd have stood out for miles as monuments to the dead. And these would have been pretty much near the centre of the actual village that stood here, the huts that stood here. And of course inside here there would have been livestock enclosures, all manner of stuff. There'd probably been some farming going on outside of the ramparts. Probably some animal grazing, because to this day sheep graze here. Sometimes they actually graze up here on the fort, but more often than not they can be found as today grazing on the slopes running up to it. Oh. So yeah, here we are. There's three main barrows. I'm stood between the two biggest ones. And here is an Ordnance Survey trigonometry point, put here in January 1974, which shows you what you can see from up here in a sort of circular, yew tree wood. Some of it's historical now, because some of the things, you can see Beacon Hill from up here, which I've also been, another very tall hill here, some miles away. Says you can see HMS Mercury from here. Now you might think that's a ship, but the Royal Navy's shore establishments also had the HMS prefix, Her Majesty's Shore Establishment, and Mercury was a very secret communication centre. Except you can't see it anymore, because it's no longer there. You used to be able to see the big communications mast, but that seems to have gone now as well. But the building housing on the site now, it's long since closed. I remember when it was open, you used to drive past and there'd be a sailor in full uniform with a rifle on guard at the guardhouse, outside the guardhouse. It's a really weird sight this far inland to see a sailor. Dear. Actually, you can get up over this second barrow. This is the highest point now I'm on. Oh dear. What a magnificent view. You know, it really is. People who don't come out to places like this, they just don't know what they're missing. This is absolutely fantastic, it really is. Oh, I think I'd tell a lie about HMS Mercury. It does look like, from here I can just see what looks like the old telecommunications mast still. Oh, there you go. Yeah, well, back on the ramparts, heading back now actually towards where I started from. This magnificent scenery we see here. This is actually part of the South Downs, which most people don't realise.
stretches up into Hampshire. They associate it with, well, Sussex, because it's often just referred to as the Sussex Downs. But the Sussex Downs are only part of the South Downs. The difference is that up here in Hampshire, a lot of it is under agrarian use. Whereas when you get down to Sussex, the parts there are mainly a national park. They're an area of outstanding natural beauty, the South Downs. I must admit, I'm not hugely familiar with the South Downs. I've only been there a couple of times, relatively briefly, but they are very beautiful. But yeah, but here is equally beautiful. As I say, this bit with the forces is relatively untouched by time. Once upon a time, though, not so very long ago, during World War II and just after World War II, they used to do military exercise. Live firing was done here. They used to use the, in fact, the long slope on this side of the fort that I'm looking down now, that was used basically. Trainee soldiers would sit down on the lower part, and this would be used to practice firing mortar bombs into, they go into the side here, side of the slope, mortar bombs, you know, projectile bazookas, that sort of thing. And so for a long, long time, those parts were, well, large parts here of the slopes were completely inaccessible because of the fear of unexploded live ammunition still being there. And it's only within the last 20 years or so that they actually managed to clear it all, and it's declared safe. So I sheep are allowed to graze down there again now without fear of being blown up. Yeah, you see, during World War II there was no regard for the fact this is an area of outstanding natural beauty and of historic importance. Don't you know there's a war on? As they're still fond of saying today, defenders of Boris Johnson usually. That's why you can't have him leaving as Prime Minister. Don't you know there's a war on? Yes, there's a war on, but it's in Ukraine. And whilst Ukraine starts with UK, like United Kingdom, we're not actually directly involved. Yeah, we are not at war with anyone at the moment. Oh dear, the desperate manoeuvres politicians go through. Oh dear. It's just the idea that only Boris Johnson, a man incidentally, who has taken millions in Russian money, both allegedly individually, which we know he has, and his donations, political donations to his party, the Conservative Party, has managed to set himself up as this sort of valiant protector of Ukraine, which has been invaded by Russia. Yeah, we don't like to mention now that he and his party were happy to take the money of Russian oligarchs, basically so that they turn a blind eye to all that money laundering going on here, using property deals and buying football clubs and whatever here. But there you go. See, I can't resist it, can I? I have to let the politics creep in. Because, hey, everything's about everything. You can't avoid it. This is what they call a bracing walk. And I tell you, if you do the circular walk, that's even more bracing. Both times I did the circular walk, I actually filmed it. The first film is now lost on a corrupted hard drive. But the second one, which is the better of the two, still exists. It's on YouTube. pretty sure it's still up on YouTube. It's not one that I removed for various reasons, and certainly I still have a copy, both on my on old hard drives, and I also have a copy on a removable drive. So it still safely exists. I remember it shot on an absolutely beautiful day, quite late in the afternoon, to try and avoid other people up here interfering with the filming. Yeah. See, that's something I don't do as much these days. I don't film my various misadventures everywhere. I felt there was enough of me. Committed to video. That I'd rather be doing than recording it all. I'd rather just enjoy the experience at the time of doing it rather than recording it and enjoying it vicariously from a distance, if that makes sense. These days out where I've recorded these bits of audio have actually been very unusual for me to do this. Normally, I leave the world behind completely when I'm out on these, out enjoying nature. Oh. Anyway, we're getting back toward the gate, beyond which is the path, the long winding path that leads back to my car. Not the long and winding road that leads to your heart, as Paul McCartney would claim, but you know. Oh dear, here you go, another day of my summer. Another day in summer, another venue, and ubiquitous New Forest ponies clearing away from me. Thank you guys, thank you. Nothing to see here, no. You just carry on. No, I'm not interesting enough to follow, no. Well, today I'm in Pig Bush, as it is known, this little bit of the forest. One of the most beautiful bits of the forest. It sits between, well, on the back road, between Bewley and Lyndhurst, and it is a truly, truly lovely place to take a walk in. Say, from the car park, I have to trek through these woods, and usually the ponies are in the woods. Normally they're out on the grassland beyond, but there you go. Contrarian ponies. I'm assuming they're ponies. They could be horses for all I know. I think it's got something to do with the height, hasn't it? But you know, in the New Forest, generally they're known as New Forest ponies. That's what they're called, the horses or ponies or whatever. But yeah, this is somewhere I don't ever recall coming to when I was a kid. We were just talking about Leap the other day, about childhood memories there. This is somewhere I discovered myself as an adult. And it is truly beautiful, particularly late in the afternoon for some reason. I like it. It's nice at any time of day. But it's somewhere I often stop into on my way back, coming back, as I start heading for home from other venues in the New Forest. I take a detour. Stop off here, Pig Bush, and I'll wander around. So I'm doing today. Oh, here we are, out into a beautiful view of the heathland here. There's some wooded areas, but yeah, this beautiful heathland with the heather, the haze of the purple haze, as Jimi Hendrix might say, of the heather there. Yeah, so. Moved along a bit now, just gaining. Now, one of the main things, getting more ponies. Yes. busy browsing their way through the grass growing between the heather over there, paying no attention to me whatsoever. But yeah, there's a really nice sort of circular walk you can do around here. If I follow this path, one now take me all the way up to a bridge which goes across the main Waterloo to Bournemouth railway line, which cuts through here. You can go over that bridge, and there's a whole other bit of pink bush across from there. But, and eventually, as I say, if you don't take the bridge, you just follow the path around it. Circles back on itself across the heathland, back to the car park. But I'm not going to do the whole circular one today. Oh, breezy again. I just think the heat wave is broken. But it's still quite warm. They're not stiflingly hot, but this breeze has come up now. Now sometimes it gets quite strong. There we go, over the bridge. There's lots of little streams and things run through here, so lots of little bridges you go over. And beside it is a ford for the forestry service. Well, it's forestry service vehicles to access through here, and also for the ponies and the cattle that graze here sometimes to get to cross and also to get down to the water. So behind me is people on horses now behind me. Oh, sorry, horse, pony. Which way are they going to go? Anyway. The great thing about Big Bush and this circular walk is it takes you through some fantastic landscape. You know those sort of fantasy landscapes you get in, you know, enchanted woods. Hear all the elves singing, that sort of thing. Little groves and things. Trees arching over the path. That's what it's like for a lot of its length. I've taken a turning off. So, a bit I've only relatively recently discovered. I say I discovered it, you know, it's been here all the time, just I never went to it before. Here we go, it's taking me a bit longer than I expected, than I remembered actually, to get here. But this, where I am now, I've just emerged from a little bit of woodland after a walk across a bit of heathland. What we have here is this lovely landscape. It opens out, well, it's sort of like a clearing or a meadow, but it actually has some trees in it. It's the sort of thing, I mean, there's no, if you look around, you can see no evidence of human habitation in any direction. There's no road visible from here, no power lines. You can't see the railway from here. The only thing that reminds you you're in the 21st century is the occasional aircraft goes overhead. But this is the sort of place like in films you see, like, you know, Knights of the Round Table come riding through on their horses in full armour. Past some trees or whatever, you find one of them sat under a tree awaiting someone to turn up to challenge him or whatever. You know, the sort of thing, fantasy landscape. I remember the first time I discovered this lovely tranquil place. I was stood under a tree surveying it when this herd of horses, I think, that is that the right word for collective word for horses? A herd? I don't know. It's a herd of horses, ought to be more accurate, New Forest ponies, came thundering in from the trees on one side.
snorting and farting away, because horses do that a lot, both snort and fart very loudly, and keeps thundering him. Again, paid no attention whatsoever to me. And they spoke as clearly as one like an alpha male who wanted to lead his acolytes off in one direction. And they all went thundering off and that, following him. And there were a couple who formed a breakaway group who obviously fed up with running around. And they went off in a different direction. Yeah, at a slower pace. I don't blame them. Yeah, I caught up with both groups. I walked back actually to the car. I encountered both of them. Both by then had found places to graze quietly. But yeah, that's what it's like here. It's like you step back into time or into some parallel fantasy universe. It really is so tranquil. Oh. I mean, I love places like these, where you can forget the rest of the world exists. You can set your head right in place. It used to be more important for us when I was doing that lousy job I used to do, but even now it's still good to sometimes visit these places. And as I say, it just sets your head right. Puts you at ease with the world. Because everything here is so nice, so tranquil. And you get some solitude here as well, that's the thing. Oh. Because, yeah, solitude can seem like a very scarce commodity in the modern world. Thanks to things like mobile phones, emails, texts, whatever, people can always seem to get to you, wherever you are. You don't get a moment's peace. So I have to record this bit again. I put my phone in it again. It switched off the recording and flicked over to another app, and I hadn't touched the bloody screen. It's done this before. Anyway. God almighty. As I was saying about solitude, that was the thing that finished me in my previous job that I gave up. It was that bloody work phone, work mobile, ringing all the bloody time, never giving me a moment's peace. You couldn't finish one job without being phoned up, having someone saying you had to go somewhere else, do this, do that. Yeah, everything was urgent. Nothing could wait till tomorrow. You know, I just got so fed up with it. And it got to the stage, it wasn't just the hours they paid me to work they were satisfied with haranguing me during. It was the hours that they didn't pay me for. You know, excuse me. There's got to be a cut-off point in the job. You're paid to do a certain number of hours a day, and once they're done, that's it. You know, everything's going to have to wait then to the next working day. I don't think it's unreasonable. You know, they wouldn't pay overtime. So, you know, this, so, excuse me, no. It's like what I eventually refused to keep covering for other people. Some people... Yeah, when they were short of staff and whatever, because I wasn't getting paid extra to do that, despite the fact it meant I was doing like two people's bloody work, having to cram it all in when I'm only one person myself. There you go. I tell you though, in the year and a bit since I finally handed in my resignation there, I have felt so much better. And the experience I had there, and I know it's unfair because not all workplaces are like that, not all employers are like that, but it's left me in no hurry to return to the workplace. I mean, certainly at the moment, financially, I'm fine. But I just don't want to risk
going, exposed myself again to that kind of trauma, which is what it was. It was traumatic. It made me physically ill. So I had to take 3 months off work at one point due to, you know, my stress level and blood pressure going through the roof. It was just horrendous. You can never ever get anything done properly because there's always these demands to go and do something else, you know. For God's sake. And then there are these obsessions. You know, they're meant to be out of the office most of the time. I'm being shifted, from, you know, being told to go from one place to another. And then they complain, oh, well, you know, your desk doesn't look very tidy. Your filing cabinet, weird, because I don't have the bloody time to do it, do I? Yeah, if I spend any time in the office, you say, oh, you're spending too much time in the office. We need you to go out and do this, that, or the other. Goodness sake. Anyway. It does seem, though, apparently, after the pandemic and the lockdowns and people experiencing different patterns of work, different paces of work, there are a lot of people apparently feeling the way I do, and there's a lot of people who've given up their jobs, you know, they're sort of 9-to-5s and they're finding other ways to make money and basically enjoying their time more. As we should. We should spend more time coming out to places like this and enjoying the tranquility. Oh, the tranquility of nature. It's beginning to cloud over now. Now I'm like it's going to pour with rain when I'm still about 10 or 15 minutes walk from the car. Oh dear, such is nature. Such is the British summer. You can never quite tell what you're going to get. But yeah. A little word actually. You know, I mentioned the railway line goes through Pigbush. There is actually a station a few miles down the road from it, Bewley Road Station. So called because it's on the Bewley Road. It's not actually near any population centre. It's out in the middle of nowhere. And it serves both Bewley and Lyndhurst, which is quite one of the biggest towns in the New Forest, and various other villages around here. But when the railway line was built, of course, it was the nature of where they could build and who owned the land or whatever, and they wanted to keep the line as straight as possible. They ended up opting to build this station in the middle of nowhere to serve these communities. It seems a bit odd, but the only thing about Bewley Road is if you want to come down to this neck of the woods and you don't want to drive, it does give you an option. You get yourself a ticket to Bewley Road and you get off at Bewley Road Station and you can have a really good walk all around this area, the New Forest, and get find your way back to the station and get on the train again back home. There's a hotel, and the only thing next to the station is a hotel, Bewley Road Hotel, which likes to think of itself as quite upmarket. There's also some cattle pens still on one side of the railway, back in the day, which go back to the days when they used to transport cattle by rail in this country. Interestingly. But yeah, so there you go. Another little eccentricity of the British railway system. But it is a way to get relatively quick and easy access to a part of a very beautiful part of the New Forest via public transport. Ah, well, that's another day of summer where I'm going to head back to the car now. Oh, another day of summer, at least another excerpt from one of my days of summer, drawing to a close. Well, here you are. Hope you've enjoyed these accompanying me on these 5 days of my summer. Give you some insight into what I do during summer. It's not all there. I don't spend all my time delving into the blood and smut of low-rent pop culture. I say, I do or in the summer particularly, I like to get outside and enjoy nature, enjoy the great outdoors, particularly when the weather's been as good as it has been this summer. Well, it got a little too hot at times, but hey. But of course, this is, as I say, just 5 days, so this is just a series of snapshots of 5 days of my summer. It's not the whole of my summer. There's still, summer isn't over yet, and there's still a fair amount of summer to come for me. So I'll be making some more trips out there. I hope to get down to the coast at least a couple more times, and wander around a few more bits of the forest and other places. So there you go. That's 5 days of my summer.